top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Whoever's doing this, it's not funny, okay?
Please remain calm. The situation is under control.
Somebody's done something in my flat. I can't get out.
You just knocked a hole through my wall.
You're welcome.
Those people outside in the orange suits.
Their hazmat suits.
Everyone's doors, windows.
Sealed shut.
You need to see this.
It looks military.
It looks toxic.
You can't just sit here and wait for them. You've got to get out.
Tell us what's happening.
A moment of contact, breathing the same air, that's all it takes.
Anyone found outside is shot on sight.
We need to move.
I just
want to
know where my husband is.
Widespread panic with his mittens worse.
Can't keep a lid on this, bro.
They're coming!
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 307, Containment. Chris here, your genial host, co-host of the Really Awful Movies podcast. Flying solo here as Jeff takes a little bit of time off in the summer. Anyway, regarding this current COVID situation, once the pandemic really went into full gear, I had already been, actively seeking out related entertainment. And obviously this one touched a nerve and piqued my interest by virtue of the titles. I had already gone through the likes of 28 Days Later, a revisit of that one, that rather exemplary work, and also the Matt Damon, Steven Soderbergh directed, outstanding Contagion. And so I guess as a way to sort of exercise pandemic-related demons, I figured this would be an interesting way to confront those fears. And again, Containment is a similar Outbreak-style movie in the style of somewhat like the Dustin Hoffman star Outbreak, but with far less of a focus on strategies to actually combat it, and rather focusing on the principles and how they cope with and attempt to flee from, the pathogen. So this one here is interesting because I was thinking about how films are structured and how, locations that are circumscribed can be used in the service of a really compelling narrative. So I'm thinking, as a kid, I saw Das Boot, and that one was about as tightly confined and claustrophobic as you can get. And you could also throw in the horror realm the likes of The Descent into the mix, a whole litany of films from Alien to Death Ship, you name it. When you're actually confined to a certain locale, either by choice or by necessity, then it makes for a very interesting narrative. I actually was revisiting Shivers from 1975, the David Cronenberg early Canadian tax shelter film last year, and that's another one that is limited by space, by design, and also probably by budget, because at the time Cronenberg would have been working with a very threadbare and largely government-funded space when he the conceit of that one is there's this, you know, wonderful condo-style development that's on an island and it's got all these amenities. It soon turns out that this is the site of a particular calamity that breaks out. Now, containment is similar in that regard. So you have a group of denizens of a quite a, I guess, a dispiriting, almost Soviet block-looking piece of architecture in, it's called a council block in West and Southampton, south of England. So I guess a council estate in British idiom and parlance refers to actual social housing. So it's pretty funny that it sounds actually very fancy, and it sounds like, oh, I'm going to retire to my council estate, but actually a council estate is shabby housing, and this is seen in the Manchester set, I think superior version of the TV series Shameless. So we have a group of people there who are on the take, and they remade it for these shores and set it in Chicago, but it's by no means as impactful. So this one is directed by Neil McInerney West, and he was apparently a disciple of the late Ken Russell, the British filmmaker known for, well, by me at least, for the really cool Bill Hurt star Altered States, which is really fun and really cool psychedelic sci-fi movie that I urge everyone to check out. I think it's from the early 80s, but I can't be too sure. So this one, you have a bunch of residents in this very uncharming, very stark and imposing housing block, just a big giant concrete apartment. It's not altogether different from where I happen to live, though slightly more shabby. Anyway, and you have a bunch of characters who find themselves at odds with one another initially as they're breaking into one another's residences and breaking down drywall and etc. with hammers and other implements. And they eventually look outside and they see a bunch of tents and government officials who are bedecked in hazmat suits. And the tents are not unlike what Mayor de Blasio set up when New York City was particularly hit hard by COVID. So these ad hoc makeshift MASH unit tents that are set up to deal with victims of the pandemic. And so the residents of this high-rise flat are looking outside and wondering what is going on, because they're only receiving communiques through this very bland and bureaucratic and almost Orwellian messaging. It says, please remain calm, the situation is under control. And which is always interesting, because given the WHO and other health authorities' various commitment or lack thereof to the importance of wearing masks, it's interesting when there's an almost justifiable suspicion and skepticism when it comes to whether health officials have your best interests at heart. And it's pretty bizarre in the jurisdiction I'm in to see the stress on wearing masks right now when the pandemic is almost, it's waning. There's only been, I think, 100 new cases a day compared with the poor souls in Florida who've had to deal with 15,000 a day. So it's funny, the insistence from the mayor and the premier and other public elected officials saying, oh, now of all things, you got to wear a mask, and not before. I was wearing masks pretty early on, just out of sheer paranoia and social distancing and all that. And paranoia, obviously, is the theme, too. The undercurrent of all these kinds of pandemic movies, when you don't know where to turn and your elected officials are coming up woefully short when it comes to communicating the importance of, well, in this case, it would be staying put in their unit. So these strange figures in the hazmat suits are almost there. They're patrolling the grounds outside of this structure, and the residents are looking outside and seeing that people attempting to escape from their building, and also just more broadly, people out in the general public are being shot on sight. And this is a little bit like the well, both the remake with Timothy Oliphant and the original George A. Romero film, The Crazies. And there's something very impactful and quite sinister about, well, masks of any sort, but particularly ones that are so closely linked to life and death, really, and that would be the hazmat suit. So you have a bunch of these neighbors, again, in this complex. The alpha male among them is Sergei, who's the most violent and confrontational. And and there's others, like a retiree who's a somewhat bigoted older lady named Enid. There's a young boy named Niku, who might be Greek or something, but he doesn't really speak any English from what I could tell. He seems fairly mute. And a bunch of other principals. And again, they have to sort of figure out what's going on and whether they should just stay put and make do with their confinement and containment, or whether they should break loose and try and seek shelter elsewhere. And this obviously was a key conceit of 28 Days Later and the movies of that ilk. And really, the post-apocalyptic genre as a whole, they have as their deus ex machina is usually a nuclear event that takes place that wipes out all of humanity, and then a quest almost from almost ancient myths, where you have the remaining survivors who have to go, and they hear these tales about across the horizon or beyond the hills or beyond the mountains of a paradise or an oasis that has water or power, or you substitute it in whatever is required to rebuild their society. Now, to the extent that this one succeeds, it's pretty interesting. The inside-outside group and physical dynamics and limitations and liminal space that has to be traversed or not is just a great conceit. And I mentioned Romero, and you could throw, obviously, Night of the Living Dead as the master class in, tension, group tension, and individuals struggling against, running up against the needs of the group and needs of themselves, and also circumscribed by location. And famously, obviously, the survivors hold down in a Pennsylvania farmhouse, and the denouement of that one is just so just off the charts, dismal, and resoundingly depressing. Now, the people here, they attempt to break out, and they end up taking a hazmat nurse hostage, and they try and they press her to the window and goad and taunt the government officials outside, saying, "Hey, listen, we've got one of you guys." Of course, this carries very little weight, because the government officials are really out in the business of self-preservation, and they have all these tools meant to, sanitize or spray down the outside, and they're more concerned about the spread of the pandemic than they are about one of their own members succumbing to it, broadly speaking. Now, McInerney West, the director, began working on this and wanted to do a modern-day urban version of Lord of the Flies, and you could see how the tension builds up especially well here, with all the different types of characters, the bulk of whom will be unknown to North American audiences, but some of them are from, I believe, Stars of EastEnders, a British soap opera with which I have limited familiarity, although it's strange that Coronation Street, the Manchester set soap opera, for reasons I really can't countenance, it airs on Canadian television nightly. So it must have some sort of, appeal amongst expats, or we are part of Commonwealth. There's a heavy British presence in Canada, and I've caught myself watching it on occasion, and it's quite a delight. It's funny to the extent that American soap operas differ from British ones, in that the American ones are very aspirational, and they typically revolve around an oil magnate or some successful wealthy family, and the goings on, the internecine squabbling and the romances between maybe even warring families. And the British ones are typically focused on very humble working class Joes, as is the case with Coronation Street, and they just basically hang out in the pub and look like people who could very well be your neighbors rather than central casting standouts. So they're all, I mean, who was it? What was the joke about how documentaries are just movies with ugly people? I don't know how I can, to what I can attribute that, but the setting here is quite wonderful, and McInerney West chooses the Weston Tower blocks in Southampton as the site, and it's very, very stark, and again, very, very bleak, and it's the perfect place, frankly, to set a movie about a post-apocalyptic pandemic, you know, addled wasteland. As an aside, now Southampton is it has something to do, I should research this, there was, I think, a lot of residents from this city were on board the Titanic, and it has a shipping history, and it's, there's a pretty interesting documentary for soccer fans out there featuring Southampton and its battles with neighboring Portsmouth, and this is called a South Shore Derby. So a derby is basically, you know, two teams in the same geographical location who frequently hate each other. They do battle, and these tend to be some of the most spirited contests, and it's something we really don't have in North America. But I highly urge listeners to check out this South City Derby documentary and see how 50-year-old grievances and gripes about workers crossing the picket line has informed the degree to which these two cities fight one another about this stupid soccer match, which is really, really terrific. Anyway, back to containment. So these disparate people are trying to get out, and they have in their way the government officials who are effectively taking them out with shoot on site orders, but also people from I guess other residents of Southampton who are trying to seek shelter from the government officials trying to take them out. They're trying to simultaneously break in to these tower blocks as these people are trying to break out. And it's particularly impactful to have a pathogen in a pandemic that's not really too well described. And it lets, there's a lot of breathing room in the beginning of the film that leaves the audience questioning what is going on and sees the proceedings through the eyes of the residents of this tower block. And that's quite effective because they really don't have any answers, and they're trying to solicit answers from an unforthcoming bureaucratic entity outside. So they are in the dark, and we are in the dark as an audience. And but then when you find out what's going on outside the walls, it makes it very, very interesting. And this is a very, very low budget production, but it's incredibly character driven and makes excellent use of just banter. And there's a couple of funny lines when they kidnap the nurse, who I believe it was her first day on the job, and they said, "Oh, this has been quite a quite a memorable one." And that, so it's character driven all the way. It has a very, I mean, they use this as a pejorative frequently, but it's stagey, but in a good way. I mean, you could see this, I think, capably translate into onto the stage, maybe London's West End or some sort of, or a Broadway almost production. So it really very, very capably plays on its strengths as being very, well, sure, I'll call it contained. It's containment is very contained in a very well done way. I mean, you can contrast it directly with 28 Days Later, in which that had a bigger budget to showcase the blight and the apocalyptic scenes that the survivors had emerged into. And this one is very much not that, and makes use of its scenery and its circumscribed, again, tight confines very, very well. Now, I've mentioned on the podcast before, I really am a big fan of movies set in high-rises for obvious reasons, that I have been living in one for 7 or 8 years. And if you really stop and think about what kind of living space you're in, it's kind of shocking. My building's 18 floors, and there's hundreds of people living in this tiny tiny patch of real estate in just outside of the core in Toronto's West End. And it's just, if you were to stop and think about it, you really don't think about it unless your walls are breached by something. So my neighbors upstairs frequently fight and cuss, and they have heated arguments about Black Lives Matter, and they're constantly at odds. I think it's a mother and daughter, and then other times you hear someone down the hall who's having sex, and it's just, it's not particularly congenial atmosphere to be confined to. And this especially comes to the fore when you're trapped during a pandemic and you're spending way more time indoors than you would ordinarily. And it's something that has really dawned on me when there's just, you overhear people's conversations that ordinarily you wouldn't ever encounter because everyone is home or has had their work and social life so completely upended that these have been almost the line between them has been increasingly blurred. And of course, we've had lots of fire alarms go off and all sorts of weird maintenance issues that have had to take place, and it's been quite a challenge. Now, I think this may be a part of the podcast where I get to what I've learned. Now, containment is, I would say, I mean, really, really, really lean. And I've often bemoaned the fact that I think movies generally should not exceed 100 minutes. And someone who's notorious for violating this, arbitrary running time that I have is obviously, Quentin Tarantino, who just insists on these bloated productions that could easily be trimmed by 20 minutes. There's nothing like that here. So this production just flies by at a lean, mean, and tightly constrained 80 minutes. And that's just so good when you're coping with all the different demands that this pandemic has brought on. You just want something to get in and get out. And this one really does that very effectively. And to the extent the ending is somewhat predictable, is not that big a deal because it's more the journey than the destination that really brings things to the fore here. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I've been delving into lots of these different films, and I caught Antisocial, which was a Canadian horror film that's shot at my alma mater, the University of Toronto, that also features a pandemic and affecting partygoers of this New Year's Eve party. And they find out about it when they're confined to a household through social media and through the news media, or what's left of it anyway. And I was thinking just again about how just god-awful movies that predominantly feature social media are. And it's just filmmakers have had a struggle dealing with nascent technologies, and it's something that I think it would be great if I don't want to say he would come out of retirement, but if he would, David Cronenberg, to tackle the impact of social media on our consciousness through maybe Harold Innes or Marshall McLuhan. I mean, he would be the one to do it. That would just be absolutely fantastic, but his career seems to be on a different trajectory of late, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's doing television now. His son, Brandon Cronenberg, we've made no bones about the fact that he's come out of the gate pretty strong with, I believe, 2014's Antiviral, which is just a terrific film about people getting close to, well, as physically and biologically close to their celebrity crushes as you can get by injecting themselves with biological materials sourced from celebrities. And I highly urge people to check that one out. It's really icky, as you'd expect from the Cronenberg name. And this, son does his father proud with that one. And again, that falls into the broader category of pathogen-type movies that I've been checking out while I've been dealing with the pandemic and a one-year-old child. Now, regarding this film, I don't know how to what extent it's been reviewed. I think far less than its contemporaries that came out this year. I mean, 2015 was an excellent year for horror. And this one was, I want to say, lost in the shuffle amongst the likes of Crimson Peak, The Witch, the fantastic Bone Tomahawk. That was my film of the year from that year. The quite exemplary Green Room, which we podcasted as well. I mean, 2015, speaking of High Rise, is High Rise with Tom Hiddleston and Jeremy Irons, which I wasn't totally sold on, but it was an interesting idea. And I think J.G. Ballard novels are just a real, real tough nut to crack when it comes to adapting them to film. I mean, although I really love Cronenberg's Crash and I love J.G. Ballard, he's just incredibly badass. So yeah, 2015 also had Tag, and We're Still Here. I mean, 2015 was badass, and Tag is Sion Sono works. I'm a huge Sion Sono fan, and you should check out all of his stuff. But so Containment sort of slipped through the cracks during that time, but it should be given its due, especially for those of you hunkering down thanks to COVID. And so it's not groundbreaking. It's by no means an all-time classic for the ages, but you got to commend them for doing a dialogue first, character first, character-driven horror. I'm always appreciative of that because, without characters, regardless of how splendid your practical effects are or your thrills, really, it all stems from that. And there's a lot of investment here. The kid and Niku is terrific. The motley crew of people are also quite compelling. So, star rating. I'm going to give this a solid 3 out of 5. It's available on Prime. You can get a sense of the influence, maybe of the Ken Russell influence. The performances are pretty good. You could boost it by half a star if hazmat suits give you the willies. But yeah, you'll find yourself enjoying this one. And we're going to come back strong next week with Jeff rejoining the podcast. It's been fun handling this on the solo front, but I need him back, and it'd be great to actually touch base over a beer and find out how he's doing. And we shall talk to you soon. Take care.